WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and if you've been hearing about the humanitarian crisis of children crossing the U.S.-Mexico border by themselves, and you've been thinking that's a problem over there, you know, for states like Arizona and Texas or New Mexico or something, think again. The surge in child migrants, roughly 50,000 who have been detained since just October, is reaching New York. As the New York Times described it, this wave of kids is overwhelming immigration advocates and social workers in this area. So with us now is Lenny Benson, the founder and director of the Safe Passage Project, a nonprofit that offers free legal counsel to children facing deportation. It's based at the New York Law School, where Lenny Benson is also a professor. Good morning and welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So these kids get detained near the U.S.-Mexico border. And they're usually taken to processing centers there in Arizona or Texas, New Mexico. How are they getting all the way to New York?
Well, it's been happening for a number of years. Of course, this recent influx is extremely large. But in the past, what the government does is interview the children. And they find that they have a relative here in New York, or they have a grandmother, an elder sibling. And they will relocate them, sometimes to a brief period of detention here in New York City. New York State. Most of the detention space is up in Westchester County right now. And then they're released to those relatives after the relatives have been vetted, and the children are placed in removal here in New York. We have over 6,000 juveniles already on the immigration court docket of about 48,000 cases.
So released to a relative. So part of the reason they are ending up in New York City in such big numbers is because we have many Central American immigrants here.
That's true, although it's not always a close relative. Sometimes it's a cousin, a distant relative. It's the old story of immigration. People come and try to find people from their community.
And listeners, help us report this story. This is a new thing in New York. This is a big thing in New York. This is a heart-wrenching thing in New York that wasn't happening before. So if you're seeing this issue in your family, in your personal life, in your line of work, call us, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Tell us about any of these kids who you know, or maybe you are one, 212-433-9692, and tell us what you think needs to be done. If you're a teacher or a social worker, maybe you're a pro bono lawyer or other kind of advocate, what's your ear witness account about what's happening to this big wave of unaccompanied minors who are crossing the border, coming from countries in Central America? There's not so much Mexico. There's Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, and eventually ending up here in New York City. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692.
Can I contradict you? It's
yeah.
Really not new. We have children throughout our community. I do a lot of volunteer work with my students and pro bono lawyers in community schools. And we'll go and do a Know Your Rights presentation. And sometimes young people reach out to us. There are children from South Asia here, from China, from other countries, from the Caribbean. Sometimes they entered legally and then they overstayed a visa. But this way, the wave that's coming now, the Central Americans, they've been coming for a number of years. The numbers have been doubling since about 2010. And so my organization's been really busy interviewing more than 300 children since 2012.
And so that's still relatively new in the scheme of things. Mm-hmm. But what's causing the surge? If the surge is 2 to 4 years old, which
right.
is, I think, what you're saying, why now? We've had Central American immigrants here for much longer than that.
So it's definitely multivariate. I would say, first, a lot of the children are trying to escape from horrific violence. Unlike some of the politicians who are saying there were belief that there was some kind of remedy or relief here, I think it really is they are not safe in their home countries. I've had children tell me in interviews, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, grandma said it wasn't safe anymore and I had to go. She couldn't protect me. There was no way to go to school safely.
Political violence, drug gang violence, domestic violence?
I would say it's primarily gangs that are enabled by corrupt governments and by failure of local authorities to protect the children. And it's also domestic violence. There was a case approved for asylum yesterday of a woman who was escaping horrific domestic violence with her children, and some governments are not able to provide protection.
Let's take a call. Waldo in New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi, Waldo.
How are you? Well, I was listening to what you were saying about the immigrants and this big wave that's coming in. And it's mainly because of the gangs. Gangs are growing so big over there in Central America that really is no escape. The kids are, coming here because when you're part of a community over there and you're not part of a gang, you're basically against them. So they're threatened. They're threatened. And, the gangs do take it out on their families. And, the kids have no more options than to immigrate.
What's your connection to the issue here? Do you know people? Do you work in a related field?
Yes. Actually, I have a cousin who actually just came because, I have two of them. They're brother and sister. Because the gang members basically said, okay, look, this is going to be the person who we're going to take in, we're going to take as, a sexual slave. Or, you're going to give us this person or you're going to die.
So what's going to happen to your two cousins now?
Well, right now, basically they're just running away from what's going on there. And
are they going to apply here for are they going to apply here for asylum? Do you know?
Yes, that's what that's what we're trying to get them for asylum, because, we already had one family member killed because of that issue. It's either you join us or you're going to die, and this person refused to, and he was gunned down for basically no reason. We come from a poor family. We're here, thank God we've thrived here, with our hard work, and this is basically the only escape that we have. We go to any other place in Central America, we're exactly in the same place.
Waldo, so, what country are you from?
I am from El Salvador, but my cousins are from Honduras, where it's a lot more violent than when we're from. But, like I tell you, now the wave is getting bigger of immigration for kids, because this is what's going on recently. I'm telling you, I went like a year ago, and, the gangs over there were, it's an infestation of gangs over there.
Lenny, did you want to ask Waldo something?
No, I just wanted to say my experience in interviewing children from Honduras, particularly girls, is very similar, that they're not safe to walk to school. They are targeted as sexual objects, and young men as well. And sadly, there's just no protection in their own country.
Waldo, thank you so much for calling and telling your cousin's story. I think it's really important that people hear it from folks as close to it as you are. Thank you very, very much, and good luck to your whole family.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And as a law professor, Lenny, if they're fleeing violence, does that mean that they can successfully apply for asylum?
It's not simple at all. I want to distinguish first that they do have a right to make the claim for asylum, and under international law, the children at the border, unlike some of the political officials that are saying they just should be sent back, they actually are entitled to an individualized determination of their fear. But the Refugee Convention has been interpreted recently by the Chief Immigration Court, the Board of Immigration Appeals, as not protecting children who are fleeing gang violence per se. They say that protection for persecution of a social group should not be defined by the persecution itself. I know that's hard to follow, but what they want is to say that you're being targeted because you are a member of a family or because of a religious objection. So our organization helps pro bono lawyers help these children. And in the last few months, I am glad to say that despite some of the difficult case law, the lawyers and the children have been able to get protection in a number of cases where it's been targeted at a particular family.
And they're fleeing this violence in their home countries, but really young kids are making the journey to the border by themselves in so many cases, which can't be safe either.
It's extremely dangerous. We have young people who tell us about assault, extortion, physical hardships like no water or food. Often when they arrive, the smugglers who have been paid by the children themselves or by family members will hold the kids hostage until more money is given. Mm.
Estella in Poughkeepsie, originally from Mexico. Is that right, Estella?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I have a question. I came to the United States in 2009. I never were in welfare or asking for any handouts. Never. Never, never. I am a citizen now. But my question is, what we are going to do with those kids? Who's going to pay for their living in the United States? Their families? The government? It's a big issue.
I agree.
And I feel sorry for them, but our taxes are going to feed them and provide housing?
Estelle, I think many people join you in this feeling and concern. Let's first say that we do have an international and domestic law obligation to make sure each child gets an opportunity to articulate their fear. And if they deserve of international protection, we will protect them, just as we would refugees fleeing from many other parts of the world. But yes, children will be integrated into our communities and there will be expense. So I think government needs to be proactive. Certainly in New York State, Albany may want to think about supplemental grants to school districts that will be impacted by recent children arriving. Catholic Charities, which sees a lot of these children, said yesterday that a huge number of them will need some support services because they have been raped along the journey or physically assaulted. And so perhaps we should all be asking the federal government for block grants as they do in other refugee resettlement programs. So we need to prepare and anticipate for the problem, but we're a wealthy country. We have a great tradition of integrating and protecting people, and I hope we
can
do that.
But we have our own problems. We have a lot of people living on the streets in New York City. We have a lot of people living on the streets in my town, in Poughkeepsie.
Yes.
And I know the fact that people getting food coupons and getting free housing, they drive in Lexus. I don't drive a Lexus.
Immigrants are not eligible for welfare benefits. These children will not qualify for very much aid at all, and that they don't even get free lawyers, though they're facing deportation, standing alone in the courtroom. So I think one should understand that they aren't going to qualify for much aid. They will be able to go to school, but we need to help everyone in our community that's poor. I agree. Mostly what I see in the families that I meet and the children I interview, the family's very hardworking and they're taking care and bringing in their cousin, bringing in their child. The grandparents are putting things to work to try to make the whole family unit support the newcomers.
Estella, what would you do as a matter of policy with respect to these kids who are fleeing the kind of violent conditions
that's
we discussed?
Thank you, Brian, for asking. Thank you for asking. I think the major problem here is not just help this kid. I am very sorry for the situation, and believe me, I will feed them in my house. But it's thousands of children that we pay somehow, indirectly, for their support. But the big issue right here, at federal government, at federal level, our Secretary of State will be working with these countries with this corruption and all these guns and...
Right, so try to fix the problems there.
Criminals. That's the problem right there.
The push factors. Estella, I really appreciate your call. And as I understand it, Lenny, we see the First Lady of Honduras is coming to the United States soon to try to repatriate some of these kids, an estimated 13,000 of them from Honduras. Clearly, this is a crisis for the Central American countries as well.
Yes.
Is the solution, bottom line, for them to address it, and as Estela suggests, with our help?
It's simply not capable of a sweeping solution. The first speech the government of Honduras gave was actually to connect the drug war to the problem of the gang increase in Honduras. And the president of Honduras said the United States should recognize we helped create this problem. But the First Lady is compassionate, and they're concerned about the safety and well-being of their children. But she has no legal authority to take the children back to Honduras if they are seeking protection from this country and if their parents are not consenting to their return to Honduras.
Adlai in Maplewood, you're on WNYC. Hello, Adlai.
Hi, how are you, Brent?
Okay.
I'm an attorney that works for a firm, but I work with an organization called KIND, which is an acronym for Kids in Need of Defense, that helps juveniles that have come over from Honduras and Guatemala and the countries you've been talking about. And I've been working with a case near its completion for about 2 years now. And it's a long process, but he's gotten status through the state and federal court, and we're nearing the end. Like you described, he came from Guatemala. He was both facing domestic violence in the home. His father would beat him and didn't want him in the house, and his mother was unable to protect him, and he was also facing gang violence. He paid a coyote to come across and was abandoned by the coyote at some point and left to fend for himself to try and get here. And actually turned himself in Texas.
So, Adlai, since we're running out of time, what does your client's story tell us about the system and what, if anything, needs to change to be more responsive as you'd like to see it be?
Well, I think the system in this case, he's going to eventually get the removal proceeding, the federal court proceeding, ended, and he will have status in this country. But there's just an overwhelming need to help children like my client that are coming from these countries. And it goes beyond the people leaving, but there is an ability to protect them through the system.
Adlai, thank you very much. And we have under a minute for a last word. Lenny.
Just to say that what Adlai was describing, Kids in Need of Defense and Safe Passage Project both do similar work. Some children can get protection in the family court as a child that's been abused, neglected, or abandoned. So Albany really needs to think about expanding resources for our burdened family courts. And lawyers out there listening, please consider volunteering. You can contact safepassageproject.org or Kids in Need of Defense.
Lenny Benson, founder and director of the Safe Passage Project, a nonprofit that offers free legal counsel to children facing deportation, based at New York Law School, where Lenny Benson is also a professor. Thank you very much.